Woohoo! We did it. Great work.
Podcast over. <Yeah. laughs>
Hello and welcome to Snark Squad Pod, a media podcast full of friendship, feelings, and snark. My name is Marines.
I'm Nicole Sweeney.
And today we are joined by Susan and Deboki.
Hi, I am Susan Dennard. I am the author of the Something Strange and Deadly series, as well as the currently ongoing Witchland series, as well as some other free stuff you can read online. And I also host a popular writing newsletter for published and aspiring authors alike called The Misfits and Daydreamers, which you can find on my website, which is my name, susandennard.com.
Hi, I'm Deboki, and I talk about books and science on YouTube at OkidokiBoki.
And Susan and Deboki are here with us today to talk about the Netflix series The Witcher. This is a long-awaited thing for Mari, my first exposure to The Witcher series. So The Witcher is a fantasy series whose first season sets up our three main characters, Geralt of Rivia, played by Henry Cavill, a powerful mage named Yennefer, and a young princess named Ciri. Geralt is a mutant who is like has been magically altered to give him powers that mostly make him very good at hunting monsters. Because of some like hand-wavy prejudice, people generally hate witchers, and Geralt is a loner, though over the course of this season, we watch him gradually start to care about various characters, mostly because of like big destiny reasons, but also by virtue of constant exposure, as is the case in the very chatty bard who decides to follow Geralt around for a while. Yennefer is born with a twisted spine and some other physical disabilities, and she is teased and harassed for this until one day when, in a fit of terror, she accidentally teleports herself. Because of this, a scary witch lady comes and takes her to a witch school and bullies her into learning to do magic on purpose. Witch school is there to train mages who will go and hang out and help kings do shit, even though mages are very powerful and kings all seem to kind of suck, but whatever. Witch school is also has like a magical plastic surgeon so that everyone can be hot while they help shitty kings. So the show gives us the really fun message of letting Yennefer come fully into her power by like erasing her disability and making her hot. Once she's hot and powerful, she does mage stuff for a while, but she finds that super boring. And to really double down on some of the like questionable messaging surrounding this character, she decides that she really needs to have a baby, even though infertility was part of the deal with becoming hot. So her like big quest now is to figure out how to reverse the infertility that she definitely chose on purpose, even though she insists in like a big speech that she had her choice taken away from her, whatever. I don't know. Ciri, the third of our sort of main characters, is the princess of Sintron and granddaughter of a badass warrior queen. So I don't know if I mentioned this at the top, but this is there's different timelines happening here. So Yennefer's story starts kind of the furthest back in time, and then Geralt is a little bit closer, and then Ciri's is kind of like the most recent. So in this most recent timeline of the show, Sintron is being attacked by a southern nation of religious zealots, Nilfgaard. So Ciri is squirreled out of the castle and told to go find Geralt of Rivia because he is her destiny. We eventually learn that Geralt happened to be at Ciri's parents' wedding and he saved Ciri's dad's life and like invokes something called the Law of Surprise, which is basically says like, I accept as payment something that you have but don't know that you have, and that something turns out to be Ciri, so they're like bound together by destiny. The plots eventually converge at the end of the season, kind of just past the attack on Sintron. So Nilfgaard takes Sintron, everybody more or less in the castle is dead, and Nilfgaard is attacking a like really important passageway into the north, and Yennefer and a bunch of other mages come and try to stop them. And there's a whole big magical battle with that all happening. Meanwhile, Geralt goes to try to find Ciri, and the season basically ends with the two of them finally finding each other. A lot of other things happen, but that is the core. That's like the essential plot.
Okay, so before we get into the question we always start with, I just wanted to kind of get a feeling from all of you. We heard from Nicole that this is her first foray into The Witcher. So for you, Susan and Deboki, what is your previous history with The Witcher franchise?
I played The Witcher 3 multiple times, and so I know about the world, because as one does when one plays, one does a bit of a deep dive, but I haven't read the books. I did try. Just couldn't quite connect, which is probably not a reflection of the books themselves, but more me, but yeah, it couldn't quite connect. So, but I do love the game.
I am also coming at this with no experience. science. I did not know what this was going to be about at all, and I don't think that the trailer was particularly illuminating. I just saw that Henry Cavill was in it, and that was fantasy, and I was like, I feel sold on that, so that's the extent of what I expected going in.
That trailer was so misleading, I thought. The trailer made it look like the next Game of Thrones, and it was so not.
So I also played the video game. I started playing the video game in 2015, which is, I think, the year that it came out. And I got through like half of the gameplay before I was like, you know what I want to do is actually read the books. And so I started reading the books, and it took me until last year, so 3 years basically, to get through the entire series, which is a reflection on the books. I'm going to say that. but whatever, personal opinion. So I have like a love-hate relationship with the franchise. I really, really love these characters, and I've been trying to bully Nicole into playing a video game, that even though she doesn't play video games, but alas, Netflix decided to do a TV thing, and I was like, that's better for my friend. So now we get to hear about whether or not you guys liked this.
I overall did, but I will say that the whole fertility thing and ableism episode, like where she gives up her disability and fertility willingly, I almost stopped watching after that. It was really upsetting for me, but my husband was still enjoying it, so I was like, all right. And everyone was, you know, I had FOMO, honestly, so I was like, all right, well, I'll keep going. Everyone else loves this show, I'll keep watching. And I did. I ultimately end up enjoying it, but like, I hated Yennefer for most of the show, which I also hated her in the game, so that's not that could have also biased me going into the show.
Yeah, I think given that my expectation was Henry Cavill and fantasy, it fully lived up to that expectation. And then I think in general, I thought the show was super silly, but like in the best way. Like the writing, which I'm sure we'll talk about, was like, I feel like that writer's room had the most fun writing the show, because they just had to write like destiny and chaos and like a bunch of times, but like just like in a fun way. And so yeah, it was somehow like that perfect combination of silly but like enjoyable, and kind of like there's a central heart to it where I felt like, okay, I'm happy I watched this.
I did not particularly enjoy this. It's fine. I think by the end, I was happier than I was at the beginning. I watched it all in like the last few days because, you know, I had to for the podcast, and I put it off until the last possible minute because that's what I always do. And the first like four episodes, even though I didn't have a ton of time to be watching it, I had to stop after each episode. I was like, I don't want to watch another episode. Saturday, I got so much shit done because I didn't want to keep watching this show. So that was my sort of basic experience. Once I got past the halfway point, like 5, 6, 7, it picked up a lot, and I was having a lot more fun with the back half of the season than the first half. The first half was a real fucking slog, and was not, I don't know, was not for me. The ableism, and also just like the general, the fantasy tropes of like the Renfrey stuff in the first episode was just like, I don't know, classic fantasy world uses its women badly. Like, there were just a lot of things about it that were not super for me. I was having a lot more fun by the end because I think I stopped expecting the show to be more than it was. Like, I think at Susan's point about the trailer making it look like the new Game of Thrones really did the show a major disservice, because it's not that. Like, the fairer comparison is that it's like a, I don't know, darker, broodier version of like the 90s Hercules and Xena shows. Mm-hmm. Like, it's much more of that vibe than like a Game of Thrones. Like, Game of Thrones, I don't know, was making big statements. And I think that was my problem, is that I kept wanting to feel like things had more of a point, and like they really didn't. It was like, girl, just gonna like brood and like whatever. And I think that I will have more fun with future seasons. This season was fine.
I expected to hate this before I went in because of like the early trailers and the first image of Henry Cavill and like his bad wig. I was like, oh no, like this is gonna be awful.
You guys need to have more faith in Henry Cavill.
I mean, I love Henry Cavill. I was going to watch it anyway. So I expected to hate it. I also, like I said, the books, the first time I think I talked about this franchise on my channel was in a video about how problematic it is. So I've always been like super aware of like the super fantasy tropes of, especially of its women and of the ableism. But I do have a lot of feelings invested in Geralt and Ciri in particular. So with all of those mixed feelings, I was like, okay, here comes Netflix. It's probably going to be really bad. And so because my expectations, I think, were in the negative, I really ended up enjoying this as well. But I agree that it took me, I think, 3 episodes. After the 3rd episode, I was like, all right, I kind of picked up on the general vibe that the show was going for. And I was able to really enjoy like the silliness. And there were a lot of things that reminded me of playing the video game.
Yeah.
And I think it's really interesting because as the story goes on, it does become a lot more about the political intrigue and about the war, and very much more, not exactly like Game of Thrones, but more in that vein. But this still had some of like the video game-esque and the earliness of just like, I don't know, Geralt walks around places and just kills monsters. And that's
it. He takes a lot of baths. Like,
He takes a lot of baths.
He does a lot of bathing.
Because he kills a lot of monsters, Nicole. So anyways, I did end up liking it. The net is that I did end up liking it, though we will get into all of those other things that the show probably did less than well. But we'll start with performance and characters first. So we've mentioned Henry Cavill, the big draw here. I mean, for me personally, it sounds like to Boki too. And I've seen a lot of mixed reactions to his performance. So I'm wondering how you guys felt about like his deadpan, the grumbling, and generally what Henry Cavill gave us as Geralt.
I was surprised he did so well. I had the lowest expectations, not because I have anything against him, but because I feel strongly about video game Geralt. And I didn't see how anyone could possibly match that. I mean, he's such a distinctive personality. And I think Cavill didn't. He wasn't like him, but he was his own version that was actually pretty awesome. He surprised me. I was impressed. He's not my physical type, so I'm not the kind of person who's swooning over him. I just thought, like, he was a good Geralt. Yeah, he did it well. I'm like the one of 4 people here who's not swooning over
him. That's the most objective.
I do love him. I thought he actually... He surprised me. I had no expectations. So
yeah, this is like I don't know if this is the right comparison, but it's the one I'm thinking of. It kind of reminds me of Thor in the more recent Marvel movies. Like, it's a very different vibe because like he's not happy or like he's not comedic in that way, but like he's still got the himbo vibe of like super like buff, but like also kind of a dork.
Yeah, I thought he was fantastic in this part. I think in general the acting was all really good. I have no complaints really about any of the acting. I think that more often than not, it was like, I don't know, overpowered in the casting department. Like they weren't really given much to like do in the script. But I think that whatever humanity exists in these characters, I give very little credit to the writing and most of the credit to the performances.
I also thought he did a good job. And I think that he did capture the spirit of like Geralt, the character, very well from an adaptation standpoint. You know, the whole Witcher thing is that they're believed to have like no emotions, which you spend the entire series like learning like Geralt does have plenty of them. But the sort of like deadpan, like monster hunter grumbling along the way, there were so many times that his little like spoke deeply to my soul, because I was like, I felt that way, and I wish I could answer people that way. So I don't know, I really enjoyed him as well. I think that, so we started there, and I want to talk about Yennefer, but I have a feeling that we won't be able to talk about her without at least touching on what we've talked about a little bit already, which is kind of the ableism plotline and how it pertains to her. But how do you guys feel about Yennefer?
I mean, just as an actress, the performance was fantastic. She was amazing. I thought she was like, she's so talented. Wow. the character itself has always been a problem for me, and the way they chose to really do it. I mean, for full disclosure, for people who don't know, I have an anatomical birth defect in my uterus and can't have children naturally. So her giving up, willingly giving up her infertility, and then them showing them her remove her uterus was like just one of the worst fucking things I've ever seen on TV, because I've spent the last 7 years of my life on a journey like hers, except mine was not by choice. And so it was really awful to me. Like, I could not forgive her character, but the actress herself, wow, beautiful, amazing. She was great.
Yeah, like, knowing nothing about her character at first, I was like pretty excited, because I was like, oh, this is like, we're gonna actually get like some kind of representation about, like, you know, she has like this hunchback and all of this stuff. And then I looked up the actress like before we even got to that scene, and I just like was immediately like, ugh, like, this is not going to go in a direction that, like, I'm actually excited about, like, because I thought it was going to be this whole other thing. And then I was like, well, nope, obviously they went in the direction of, like, actually, she's going to be hot.
The thing is, if you are watching any of these scenes completely devoid of context, again, like, endless credit to this actress for performing the shit out of all of this character's emotions. And like, there's like the potential for this to be a really kind of complicated and interesting character, but it feels like at every turn she is constructed with the cheapest choices possible. We have this major character who is this incredibly powerful witch, but like, I don't know, she has really clear flaws too, but all of these things always seem to come from and be directed towards the least interesting things I could possibly imagine. And I don't know. That is kind of my general criticism with most of the writing of this, is that I feel like, I think part of the problem is that this show relied so heavily on a lot of tropes that I don't actually care for.
I think that the reason that it is like the most disappointing to me is that it had some undercurrents of where it could have been a little bit more like complex and nuanced or whatnot. And the best part is that it actually does it better than the book. The books are worse. So it improves what we get in terms of like representation, but then also it doesn't fully commit. And some of it is the hindrance, I think, of the writing or what they put together. So I think that one of the things that I kept thinking about was that we get to see Yennefer basically trade in her disability for being hot, is what we've been saying throughout this. But there's this whole like idea that I don't think that was communicated clearly, that it was like mages are supposed to be like preternaturally pretty. It isn't just like, I want to be normal. Like they have this like whole thing. So it's like the message of like the way that these mages like deal in power in this world is in this like step above beauty, to the point that it becomes something so ingrained in their power. But it didn't go there. It didn't show us, like, nobody else had a significant change except for her. And she was the one with the disability. So it's kind of like Nicole saying, like, it took the cheapest way out. And again, you know, you get the sense that she's saying like, oh, I didn't have a choice but to trade in, you know, my fertility for this thing. And it could have been a thing where she felt trapped. Like, her options at that point were either run away with her like teenage boyfriend, or however old she was at that point, run away with that boyfriend, or go through this and gain the power that she wanted.
Or like not have them even let her know until it's too late. Like, don't do the whole removing of the uterus horror scene and just have it suddenly be like, you're barren, BT dubs. Because that would have been like, oh yeah, no, you really didn't have a choice and you didn't know what you were getting into.
Exactly.
It was so weird they had that later in the season. It was like the last episode or second to last. Uh-huh. Where she's like, I didn't know what I was losing. Yes, you did.
Yes, you did. Yeah. It felt like they made her enchantment the most eyes wide open of all of them, right? Like, she missed the ceremony and she has this whole thing of like going out of her way to be like, no, I'm getting my fucking hot mage enchantment. Like, yeah. She had the most choice.
And killed her friends.
Yeah.
Right.
So I rewatched like the first half of the show, and I haven't rewatched the second half. So I don't know how much of this is going to hold up if I like when I rewatch the second half. But a thing that kind of struck me about her like story over the long term, thinking about it against a lot of fantasy, or not even fantasy tropes, against just like tropes, is kind of like the idea of like a woman being punished for her ambition. And I actually, one of the things I did appreciate about her story, at least the way that I interpreted it, is that she's had this ambition and she's become so powerful. I didn't read her story as it unfolded as like kind of falling along those same trope lines. Like, she is like questioning her ambition and she's questioning her power, but that to me read in a much more interesting way. I don't know if the show actually intended that, so I don't know if I'm giving it too much credit, but it's something that I thought of. It's just kind of interesting against, I guess, a lot of stuff I've been thinking about in terms of like ambition and like what's the point of it in the grand scheme of things. So that was one thing that I did like about her story, or at least that her story made me think about in a way that wasn't just like, I'm frustrated.
I absolutely agree. And I, like I said, like by the end of the show, I actually liked her. I thought like in the last two episodes, they did a really good job, especially the last, really, of like kind of showing her change of heart and arc. The way they handled it throughout the season, like, I don't have a problem with powerful women and ambitious women. I write them. I just think they could have maybe they rushed it. I'm not entirely sure what they did. And then the whole fertility thing, like, I don't understand why they couldn't have just done that differently. And the ableism, like, couldn't she have been disabled and powerful and still been ambitious? Because like, dude still thought she was hot enough to get to like love mm-hmm. and have sex with, and she was chosen still. She was the most powerful. I didn't quite get that. Like, I didn't see why the writers either didn't make it like you couldn't get in. Like, they could have barred her entry as becoming a sorceress to one of the kings, and then it would have made sense why she did it, maybe more sense. Or they could have just not had her give up her disability. I don't know.
It ultimately comes down to Yennefer's story being far too rushed, just that in general, like, this season needed maybe like a 10 episode order, and like a good chunk of that needed to go to Yennefer to give a lot of that stuff more space and room to breathe. Like, I think that the ableism baked into that character's origin story is a kind of thing where you would have had, in order to get rid of it, you would have had to really radically overhaul this character to a degree that I think that it would have always been a problem.
Yeah.
But I think that there are ways that they could have at least said, all right, like, we're going to try to make this true to the source material and like, we'll keep that. But like, I don't know, not been so fucking insistent about reminding us of it over the course of the rest of the season. It was just, I don't know. There were a number of problems surrounding the way that Yennefer's storyline was written. And they were really, really frustrating because, back to Deboki's point, like, there was the potential. The potential was there.
Yeah, I think that, to be fair to the show, I don't think that it ever showed that her decisions were good ones. I don't think that the show rewarded her for what she did. I think that what she found out is that in her mind, she had always equated, like, you know, gaining this power and doing whatever it would take to gain that power, and then finally being happy. And then she got there and she wasn't.
And I agree totally. Definitely do. I just think, like Nicole said, it was too rushed. And I wonder, I'm curious what you have to say, Marines, about the books. Like, how accurate was it to the books?
So in the books, mages are, most of them are sterile just as a byproduct of being mages. It just is, has something to do with like their cellular biology or whatnot, that most mages are unable to have children. But Geralt's mother is a mage. And so some women just retain this ability or men to have children, but not all of them. And it's never really explained. So for the purpose of the show, they went like ham on the like fertility portion of it. They like completely like blew it in importance and all that. But in the books, Yen is also a much more, like, her self-serving kind of ways are, I think, even worse in the books.
Yeah.
And she's also very overtly sexualized in the books. She's still a very attractive actress. And obviously, her and Geralt have a romance. But in the books, it's like, you know, even in the video games, Geralt walks around in the video games. And it's like you expect him to start kissing and making out with every woman he talks to because that's how much it's sexualized.
I love that game, but God, it's just everywhere. It's everywhere. Everywhere you go, there's bare titties.
So they toned that down for the show, but yeah,
I mean, only a little. There's still a lot of like really gratuitous bare titties. Like Yennefer's just often like
orgy scene.
Yennefer's gonna do some magic. You know, why not just like let my robe open while I do my magic? Okay.
Definitely. Yeah. And I do wonder how much of that was like them catering to the fanboys of the games, because like, what is it? It's like 40 million people have bought that series, the games. That's a lot of people. And so much about how they set up the show made me think they weren't expecting it to explode. And they were expecting really just the fanboys to watch it.
See, to me, it felt more like a response to the Game of Thrones kind of positioning of the show,
sure,
right? That there's just the blood, again, going ham on the infertility thing to like including that really gruesome and unnecessary, like that. There was a lot of unnecessary gore and boobs, which both feel like nods to Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
So moving on from Yen, how do you guys feel about Ciri? Because she was kind of like the other third main portion of this. She was also the third main like timeline. How did you guys feel about her story and overall, like the whole story in Syntra?
I liked it. They didn't really develop Ciri all that much. I felt like I was bringing my own knowledge of her from the games into this show. And if I actually think about just what they gave us in the show, she was honestly a pretty passive character. She just kind of wandered the woods and things happened to her.
Yeah.
I think the actress herself was quite skilled, but I kind of left that. I know where we're going with it because I know the story in the world, but also I think of Ciri as having so much fire and spark, and I didn't feel like the show character gave her that.
Yeah, I feel like I don't actually have much of an opinion just because, she's, like you said, she's passive. She kind of just goes from thing to thing, which is fine. Like, I feel like if I were in her position, I'd probably also be like that. But I'm also excited to see what will happen in the next season. Like, I'm a sucker for the kind of like, you know, I don't know, like gruff dude has to take on like a super powerful child kind of thing. Like, I'm very pro that. So I think I'm excited to see where her story goes, especially like they set up all of this stuff with like the Syntra versus the elves and now like with Nilfgaard. Like there's like these long term consequences from like stuff that her grandmother did that she's now having to contend with. And I don't know if the show will do anything with that, but I'm interested to see what they try to do.
Yeah, I really just didn't care about her. Like she was just kind of there. I am very excited to see what like where this character goes and what her second season sort of setup is, because it seems like now that she's gotten to where she needs to be, she's about to have a real coming of age story, and that's my shit. So like I love a magical coming of age story, so I'm excited to one day care about Ciri. I currently like really don't care about her at all. Her grandmother was super fascinating. Her grandmother, I feel like they did a much better job of kind of working through this woman is like a total badass and she's very powerful. She also kind of sucks in some like really key ways. And like they wrestled with all of that much, much better with her grandmother than probably any other female character on the show. Like I think the grandmother is the best written of the female characters
totally
on this show.
Agree.
So RIP her, but I don't know. Well, I look forward to season two, Ciri.
This was the biggest bummer for me because the thing that I love about The Witcher is Geralt and Ciri's relationship. And I know that they have to do all of the backstory in order to get there. And that was fine. But this is where it felt the most rushed to me, is because in episode 7 is really when you like get this idea that Ciri is looking for Geralt, and then she finds him in episode 8. And the scene that it comes at the end of the second book where Geralt and Ciri are reunited is one of the most beautiful emotional scenes in the entire series. Like, I love it so much, but it's because you spent these entire like 2 books working towards them, looking for each other and just missing each other, and like all of the stuff that she goes through in order to like almost like to finally get there, like when they get reunited, it's almost as if they already have like this bond. Whereas in the show, you last an episode and they run to each other and you're like, yeah, I don't care. Like, you know, like there was nothing here. Like, it didn't feel earned that moment. So it's truly, truly the biggest bummer for me.
And like everything else in the show, it's basically just a line of dialogue that's like, we were bound by destiny. So like, this is really, of course, we were going to find each other. And this is really meaningful. And like, the whole show is written like that, where there's just like, it's like, and now we're going to have a line of dialogue to tell you what's going on
here.
Info dumping. Well, that's another thing about like the writing and the info dumping. It also like missed. I'm sorry. I can't stop talking about this as an adaptation because I just have all these things in my head. But it missed so much of the context of why this is such a big deal for Geralt. As like, you kind of get the sense they say it like he's one of the only like witchers left. There are a few of them, but you get so much more of his history and the fact that his home has been destroyed. Like, Kaer Morhen doesn't exist anymore. And there's so few witchers left. And this is like now building his family. And, you know, so that idea of why he wants to find Ciri and like him accepting his destiny and wanting to be a caretaker for this girl, like, means so much more. But they skip past that at all. And they just like load you with like these single lines of like exposition where it's like, you could have done more.
Hearing you say that is also super interesting to me because it is related to one of my other kind of big grievances about the show that I think that could have been assuaged some by giving some of this stuff more context, giving some of this stuff more space. But like the whole bit with witchers being hated by people in general, in the context of this show, I just, making someone who looks like Henry Cavill some kind of social pariah because of prejudice is like the least interesting way that I can possibly imagine exploring prejudice. Like, what?
Yeah, they didn't really explain that or show it. They really just said it a few times and then suddenly toss a coin to your witcher goes viral and everyone's like, witches are cool now.
This is an unbelievably hot man who is very powerful and like kills monsters, but like, I don't know, I don't know. I just, the idea that everybody hates him is just whatever. Like, I get it. Like, prejudice doesn't have to make sense and like that's how it works. But again, this is like the least interesting way that you can explore that idea.
It was never really well done in the game either. And I don't know, maybe the books do it better, but there's never really any understanding of why. Like, this dude comes and kills your monsters. Why do you hate him? I don't get it.
I get it is a little bit better in the books, I think. And again, this is just like, I think, a failure of the writing to really discuss like the foundational pieces of this and be really hand wavy about some of the magic. Like, it did talk about like the mages having to sacrifice, like nothing comes from nothing, chaos and all of that. But the like wider ideas of like how hated magic is in the society, and also like, I don't know, just how the mutations really work and everything that the children went through. Like, it was very much, it mirrors Yen's story a lot in that children are plucked from their families and like forced to go through some of these mutations and then how that translate into how society views them. So yes, there's like more backstory there that we just don't get in favor of, I don't know, viral songs. I really like the song, though.
I do, too. I really like the song.
Yeah, I did not get it all that, like, magic was a thing that was hated. That's, like, a new thing to understand about this world.
It's funny because I don't feel like they included it at all in the show. I mean, the mages go to rescue the people at their version of Helm's Deep, and basically no one turns them away or seems horrified. So, like, it's definitely not at all shown in the show that magic is not liked.
And I, every time they said the word mutation, I like jumped a little, because like, given the setting, hearing the word mutation over and over again, I was like, what is this? Like,
I felt that way every time they said okay. I was like, okay is it a word that came out of the 1870s America? Why is it in your fantasy world?
The worst one of that for me was Yen saying that she didn't something complaining about living off the grid. I was like, there's no electrical grid. You have no grid, girl.
I think I shouted the same thing.
It's the chaos grid.
Yen.
I don't know how accurate it was because I have no concept of you know when swear words came about, but when Geralt first said fuck, I was like, what? You're cursing at me. We've talked a little bit about Yen and Ciri, and we touched on Calanthe and Renfri, but in general, how did you guys feel about the women that fill out this cast and the representation of women in, you know, throughout?
Okay, I did really like the head mage lady, whose name I'm blanking on.
Like Tisea?
Yes. I actually really, really liked her, and I liked that they made her have more dimensions by the end of the first season. Mm-hmm. And even a kind of good relationship with Yen. But other women, gosh, sometimes I did like Triss. I kind of felt like they did just sort of pop in diversity. Like here's a woman of color. Here's a woman of color. Here's a random mage who's going to be black without really ever going into how the world is actually built. And maybe I'm asking too much of a TV show. Because I know the game and the books are super, 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 super white. I don't think there's a single person of color in any of them. I really love Triss in the games. She's my favorite in the games in terms of lady characters. And I felt like the show, I don't know. I hope she comes back more because she was not really at all important in the show.
She was a fun character. She was definitely one of the side characters that I wish that we had gotten more of. Having so just from the context of the show, I don't know if that like is any comfort to your love of this character in the games. Yeah. That coming only with the context of the show, she was a side character that I wish that we had gotten more of. To the diversity point, it is set in a completely magical, arbitrary world. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, there's no, you can't say, oh, like, history, like, whatever. Like, the continent, this unnamed continent, it could be anything, could be anywhere. Because I think, in general, there is very little on this show that is actually that deep. Like, I think my biggest sort of takeaway yeah. and like the way in which I was watching it wrong is that I kept wanting things to be deeper than they were. And like, it's just in general, it's not that deep. It's like kind of like the thing I had to kind of step back and say to myself over and over again. And so I think that like, given that broader, like that sort of larger context, the idea of just saying like, we're just going to have a really diverse cast and like, that's it. And like, that's yeah. how we're going to do this. And like, that's that, yeah. you know, we're not going to explain it. It literally doesn't matter. Like, that's just what this world is. I totally. Appreciated that approach to this.
And one thing I was thinking about, again, this might fall apart like with deeper analysis, but maybe the show doesn't warrant it. But one thing I appreciated is that it never felt as much like tokenism the way that some other show yeah. do, because they had multiple women of color. But with that said, I think the biggest weak spot was that they never explained Fringilla's character. Like, yes. I have no idea what her goal is and why it is. And there is interesting stuff there, but like, they're kind of putting all of Nilfgaard going forward as a thing that Yennefer caused because she didn't go there. But it's like, Fringilla is the like the mage who's actually like making all this happen. Like, what is her motivation? Like, she is in essence the villain of the show at this point, it seems like, or where a lot of the villainness is centered, but I don't understand what she wants or why she wants it.
That's a good point.
The only time that, you know, the voice that was telling me it's not that deep got overpowered with the voice that was like, question this. Not the only time, but one of the times was when Fringilla is dancing with the king that she's supposed to go to, and he clearly is not about her and wants someone from his own land. I was yeah. like, is this a racism thing? And like, maybe it yeah. wasn't. Like, maybe it was just like, you know, but whenever you put like a black woman next to a white man and he's right. like, I want one of my own, like, I'm going to be like, what's going on here? But they kind of like hand wave over that as well. But yeah, in general, I appreciated that they kind of just let it be. And I think my biggest issue with the books and with the show is that it doesn't think about like the context and like the larger tropes it feeds with its women. Mm-hmm. So like you get like Renfree, who I loved the performance and I you know, enjoyed watching her. And I think that I enjoyed pieces of her story. But at the end of the day, you know, she's killed. And then I think one of the worst, I mean,
she has sex and is killed by the man she has sex with the next day. Correct. It's like, it's like in every way.
and it's framed like, oh, it's because she couldn't get over. She couldn't get over her rape. Like, yeah, I mean, no kidding. So that like awful. And then to add to the awfulness of like Yen's scene of when she's getting her magical plastic surgery, they cut it against the Striga, who is like a cursed princess who also has a hunchback. And just like the images of those two things playing off of themselves, I was like, ugh. So you have another like cursed woman. Then you have Calanthe, who's arguably the best one. She also dies. And so it's like all of these women that show up, and even if they can be somewhat interpreted as complex, they meet really bad ends. And so once you get that over and over again, it's like, I don't think the show likes its women all that much.
And I think it is what you just said, though, is that it's like thoughtlessness more than anything else. And I think that the small example of the dance is like, that is a really good small example of a thing that this show just does in big terms all over the place. Like it's clear that in the context of the show that is supposed to just be about like the people from that kingdom, you know, they're very biased in favor of their own people or whatever, but like it didn't occur to anybody that what they were creating is a scene in which a white man is salty about having to dance with a black woman. And like like that seemed to like really go over everyone's heads in a way that you're just like, what? And it feels like that is true of so many things in this show.
I wanted to also ask you guys about something that I brought up on Twitter and I almost regretted it immediately. I mean, it's not that big a deal, but it was just like I don't know. So the timeline, how did you guys feel about the way that it mixed timelines? Did you think it was confusing? Did it like ruin anything for you in terms of enjoyment, you know, if you did enjoy it or whatnot? And when did you pick up on the fact that we were watching different timelines?
I mean, I figured it out right away, but I think that's because I had this background knowledge going in, definitely because of that. I don't know why they did it, to be honest. I guess they needed a way to make there be a cohesive through line, which is series. She stays chronological the whole time, pretty much. And it's everyone else who jumps around. But it was, I having spoken to people who haven't read the books or played the games, like they struggled to care about Yen or Ciri or Geralt because the three of them aren't connected in any way for the first chunk of episodes, which is sort of like not always the best way to introduce multiple POVs. So, even though I think in some ways the timeline thing was really confusing and hard to follow, and I don't know why they did it, I also don't know any other way they could have done it. So,
as I said on Twitter, knew almost immediately that we were dealing with multiple timelines, specifically because of there's a battle of Calanthe's first big victory that like at some point in the first episode, you have nearly back to back, or maybe they are back to back, I don't know, scenes where Ciri says something about like, when you were my age, you won this battle. And then like the next scene is Renfree being like, and then this other princess just won her first battle. And so you're like, okay, cool. These are two different moments in time. Like that made sense to me. Like I clocked it pretty quick. I had no problem understanding that these things were happening at different times. I was a little bit slower on the uptake about Yen, but like the towers, I don't know. Like I got there. I understood that we were working with a bunch of different timelines, whatever. I feel like two things. One, the show could have been clearer. Like I got there, but I also think that the show could have been a little bit clearer about where we were in time. And I also think that while I feel like it makes sense to me that they told these three stories at these three moments in time, ultimately converging where they did, like that broader thing, I get it. And I think it was mostly the right choice. But I feel like my kind of small fix on this would be start at the end a little bit. And then like with something more unifying, like getting everybody all together in some type of way at the beginning, just to give us like to go back to Susan's point about you have these multiple characters and they have nothing to do with each other for basically the entire show. So like giving us something as a hook at the start to know what we were working towards would have been, I think, easier to get invested in all of these characters and easier to keep track of the disparate threads of these characters. I understood very quickly that we were working with different timelines, but I also think that more could have been done to make it clearer.
Yeah, I had a similar, like, I think I didn't process it immediately, but like Renfrey says that thing in the first episode and I was like, huh, I guess that I think that means what I think it means. And then like over the course of the season, it like was like, OK, yeah, that's definitely it. I think the major place where it took away from me was just like within individual plot lines, like with Yennefer, when we flash forward to like, OK, now she's been at the court for a few decades, I guess. And she just kind of says like, oh, it's been 3 decades. And like my sense of like 3 decades is like... not really there, given like the how fast the show is moving then. Like it kind of took away that sense of like her progress because she looks the same. So like to me, I could have just thought it was the next day from when she went to Adern, but like or Adern. And so yeah, it just kind of took away, I guess, from that. Yeah, that sense of development.
I agree too, because and I felt the same way with the romance because it's like they fuck, he falls asleep. Great. And then we cut ahead to them like dragon hunting and he like talks about how he always smells her and like
always, as far as I'm concerned, y'all fucked one time.
Like that's exactly it. And I was like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. And I know there's like big chunks of time passing, but I felt as a viewer kind of cheated of their story. And yes. I didn't even know their story because I played the games and read all the wikis. But yeah. I still felt cheated of it. Like I'm not invested in their relationship at all.
Yes.
And I know a lot of people really are, and I don't quite get it, to be honest. I felt like those big jumps in their stories, definitely just kind of... felt like I'd been cheated.
The jump from their first time having sex to them having a broody conversation about how hard it is to be apart was like, that was a choice. That was a choice. And a
yeah,
bad
how
one.
Long has that been going on for? I don't understand right? how long they've been doing this distance
yeah,
thing.
How many times have you met? Did he stay awake each yeah. time after? Like, yeah. did you canoodle?
Yeah, they what? Also did not fuck that long. So, like, what no, is the basis no. of their relationship?
I tend to love stories that drop you in the middle and cause and like make you puzzle it out. I prefer that to things that are a little bit more spelled out. However, I think the problem here is that it asks you to puzzle out a story you shouldn't be thinking too hard about. And so it's
right.
like, why?
Yes.
Why are you making yes. me think about this? It's only going to be to a detriment to your own like crappy what? Like writing sometimes. yeah. So I also like knew because of like the background, but it wasn't until I started rewatching that I picked up on the fact that they did this multiple times where they connected from one scene to another, like gave you clues. Like Renfrey told her story about how all of the girls were killed. And then in the next scene, Malsak was telling Ciri's story and he was like, many years ago, all these girls were killed. And I was like, oh geez, I just completely over my head the first time. And I don't know why. Well, I do know why. It's because I wasn't thinking about it. I was trying right. to just yeah. let yes. it wash over me.
Yeah, it's a lot to expect from a viewer. Like, I was surprised they didn't, at least in the first episode, show, like, years, you know? Just show,
yes.
like, this year.
Yes.
And then go give us the next year, a little subtitle. And yeah. then you do that 3 times, and then we're kind of at least clued in that they're not in the same, like, decade.
This is, like, totally a weird random story. But I was in... a book event in Miami was for Erin Morgenstern's The Starless Sea. And so she talked a lot about loving video games because that book has a lot to do with it. And so during question and answer time, a dude bro in the audience was like, since you love games, what did you think about the Witcher series? And he was like, and that stupid timeline. And so he asked it like expecting her to be like, yeah, that sucks. But she was like, I loved it. And so basically what she said was that it's kind of how she told the Night Circus in that same sort of like style of the like timelines. And so I thought that was really interesting until I got home and I was like, yeah, but Erin, you had titles that said
she
the year.
She told us when we were.
She told us when we were.
Yes.
It's kind of different. All I wanted was a title.
Literally, if you had just given me some years like Erin did, we would have been fine.
Exactly.
Yeah, because even like, even having pieced together that we were dealing with multiple timelines, I did not know how these timelines fit together. And like, also like the timelines are operating on different scales. Like they're both like different years, but also like different like volumes of time. Like Ciri's is 2 weeks or something, I think, like over the course of the whole series. Geralt is like decades. Yen is even more decades. So like what I think of as a span of time is also changing from character to character, but I don't know what that is.
Yes.
The final thing that I just wanted to add my piece, and yes, this is about this as an adaptation. I'm sorry. But I just had to say that we didn't talk about this when we talked about Henry Cavill and playing Geralt, but I know that it was super like gory and stuff, but it spoke to me as a video game player. And the first fight scene that we see, like the big extended one with Renfri, was just so freaking well done as a callback to the video games. There's even a point where he's taking on the multiple men and someone just goes, Witcher! And it's the, I swear to God, the exact same sound effect from the video game. And my and my happy little heart was just like so happy.
When he did his powers for the first time, I was like, yeah!
Yes.
I got really excited. I actually wish they had done a lot more of those. Like they didn't get
he has
into
more
the cool
powers.
He has so many cool powers, and they really didn't go there. They never explained the little, you know, his tonics and potions that he's drinking.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was one thing where I was like, what makes this world actually unique, and the only real thing that makes it a unique fantasy world from other tropey fantasies out there, are the Witchers.
In general, I think that all of the fight scenes were really well done. Like I agree about that first fight scene. I also think the kind of the big finish at the end where you have all the mages fighting, I thought that was really cool and interesting. And you know, like again, it's I hate to make comparisons between like this show and Game of Thrones, but it's like kind of unavoidable. So you have like on the one end of the spectrum, you have like that fucking talking dragon as a comparison, which was like very, very bad. But on the other hand, you have like that bit with the mages was really, really interesting to me, because I was like, oh yeah, this is your like big finale battle sequence. And like you are clearly working, like you know that these comparisons are going to be in the viewer's mind. It's unavoidable. And like you are obviously working with a much smaller budget than Game of Thrones was working with, but they still found ways to make it really, really cool and interesting, and to say like, and here's like this mage's power, and like it does this, and this other mage is gonna, you know, whatever, do this other thing. Finding ways to keep that entire sequence very, very visually interesting. That was one of the better sequences of the show. I think both that first fight and the final battle, but in general, I think all the fight scenes were really, really well done.
And even when he was like fighting against the Striga, like that scene is like very, like that fight is very Game of Thrones, where it's just like black tones on black tones on black tones, but it was actually lit and edited so that you could see what was
lighting.
Happening.
I, and like in general too, I think this point about the fight scenes being like one of the strengths of the show, like it's not that deep. And so like leaning into these parts, you know, a lot of our audience is here because it's part of a video game, so like let's have like cool fights and cool whatever. So those parts worked really well when they were leaning into those kinds of things. It worked for me.
I agree. I also like the Yen scene where she's trying to save the baby. Although, did they have to show us the dead baby so many times?
Did they have to keep showing?
Oh my God.
Did they have to make her monologue to a dead baby?
I was so fucked up. I was really disturbing. I had to close my eyes and ask my husband to tell me when it was done, because I just could not look at that. But the actual chase scene away from the dude with the weird scorpion creature was pretty fucking cool.
Yeah. Yes.
That was really high tension. It was really well done.
Yep. I did not have high hopes, because the first scene is of Geralt being plucked out of some water by like a giant monster, and it looks so bad. I was like,
this looks so bad.
But then by the time we got to the first fight scene, Henry Cavill sells, like, yes, Henry Cavill selling a man who can beat up anyone, I believe it. But also the ways that they like incorporated some of like even the slow-mo into it, which is a very video game thing, and the choreography. cinematography was really, really good.
I will say, though, like, to all of our points, your points of how you don't, you can't think too deeply. The magic is never explained. Like, they say there's a cost, but we never actually see the cost once they leave Aretuza. Isn't that what it's called?
Yes.
Because, like, that whole final battle, I'm like, doesn't I get that the bad guys are spending money, aka each other, to cast these spells,
right?
But what are you guys spending? What are the good guys spending? I don't understand. So that was one of those where, like, you know, I was thinking hard about it. I had questions.
Good guy magic is free, Susan.
Magic is free. Except when you want to be pretty. I really liked the show overall. I liked that it was campy. It was refreshing to see something different. And I think, like we said, the trailer did it a disservice. I was expecting it to try and copy the game, honestly. I thought they were going to try to go for the grittiness of the game franchise. And they didn't. And that was really refreshing to me. It's too bad the way they handled the whole disability thing and the fertility thing. But I do like Yennefer now at the end of the season. I like her. And so there you go.
That's a good, like, reminder, because three of us started this off by saying we liked it. And then we just talked about bad things for an hour. So, I mean.
Yay.
Well, and, like, the thing for me is, like, I also am coming out of this feeling like I never want this show to think it has something to say. Like, I would like for it to continue in the same mode. I don't want it to, like, try, partly because I think it will fail and partly because I'm kind of just enjoying this the way it is.
Give Geralt more sword scenes.
Yes, definitely that. But also, it's just like it's built on so much nonsense that if you decide in, like, season two or three that, like, now we have deep thoughts, you're gonna have to retcon so much to do that. So, like, don't.
Yeah. Fuck. That's the level of depth in the show.
I had an English teacher who told me that, like, or her thing when we were, like, she would ask us about, like, themes or whatever in a book. It's like, she would say, you know, themes are never one word. They're an argument. I feel like this show has one word themes. Like, it's destiny, chaos. That's it. Like, those are the themes. And that is all I want from it.
And boobs.
Yeah. And yes. I saw somewhere that the actress who plays Yennefer, I don't know, it was apparently a big deal that she declined to have a body double. And I'm like, yeah, she's 23 and, like, really hot. And in 20 years, she's going to be glad that there's this, like, record of, like, look how great my boobs looked.
Oh, my God. As a 35-year-old woman watching her, I was like, oh, I had no idea what I was giving up when I was 23. If only I had valued my body. Because, yeah, damn, she looks amazing. Show them titties, girl.
Right. I would also let my robe fall open while I was doing magic if I looked like her.
Yeah.
Oops.
Can we also just quickly discuss Yen's clothes?
Oh, yeah.
Like, her dresses were amazing, but also at the end, the final battle dress, it looked like curtain rod, like curtain things the whole time. Like, her dress was just made of curtain ropes, whatever you call that.
Yes.
And like, my husband and I couldn't stop talking about it. He kept just saying, like, this is not practical. What if one of those ropes catches fire?
Yes. Yep.
What is this dress?
There was also, like, a keyhole kind of opening on her cleavage. And there's one shot that was, like, looking up at her. And just the way that her cleavage was in that dress looked painful. I was like, why are you battling this way?
I love her dresses. I actually thought it was awesome, but that at that one final battle, I was just like, really? This is what y'all are gonna go fight in? All y'all are dressed so impractically.
And on that note, thank you to Susan and Deboki for joining us this week, and thank you all for listening. If you are enjoying this podcast, consider sharing it with your friends or rate and review it wherever you are listening. We'd also love to hear all of your thoughts on The Witcher. There will be a post dedicated to this episode up on snarksquad.com. You can also sign up to join our community on patreon.com/snarksquad. You can also find us on Twitter at snark_squad. I am at My Name Is Marides.
I am at Sweeney Says.
I am at ST Dennard.
I am at okidoki_boki.
This podcast is produced by the Snark Squad and edited by Nicole Sweeney. The theme music that is playing us out right now is by Stefan Chen.